Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents, for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, hello, everyone. This is Chuck Bonneville and Julie Hayden, the Chuck and Julie Grassroots Show. Truth straight up.
Truth straight up. The show brought to you by Mountain West Wellness, Advanced Acupuncture and Chinese Medicine, along with happytrees.co. So we're waiting to get Robert Spencer, international affairs expert, Jihad Watch.
Yeah.
Probably one of the leading experts on what exactly is going on, why it's going on, what's the U.S. role, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, over in Israel. And also at 3:30, having former Congressman Tom Tancredo come on. He's got kind of a funny story about how he targeted, no, he didn't really, but how he sank Newt Gingrich's attempt to be Speaker of the House.
Well, that's the last time really a speaker's been overthrown. So,
right.
Not by a vacation of the chair, but by the
right. Well, and he explains some of the behinds there, and he'll talk about how things actually really work and whether we can expect a difference in that. But while we're waiting for Robert, just a ton of stuff going on. I mean, in so many questions, I think one thing with this whole thing remains clear, and that is that the U.S. policy, starting with Obama, I think giving legitimacy to terrorists, right? Somehow, and it's on purpose. I don't think that they were naive, do you? And thought, oh, we can work with them and everything.
No,
right?
they had their own worldview, which is they wanted Iran. Obama wanted to get out of the Middle East, and he thought Iran would be the one who was strong enough to be able to take over, which is an amazing analysis, but he never, of course, said that. Unable to reach.
Okay, hey Thomas, so go ahead and keep trying, Robert. I assume, like I said, we're trying to get Robert Spencer. I'm assuming that he's like incredibly busy right now doing columns and things. I know he's got tweets going on constantly. But yeah, go ahead. So I'm sorry.
And therefore, it decided that it try to put a lot of things in, giving aid to Gaza Strip, which would mean money would be going to Hamas inevitably. And Hamas did an amazing job of fooling everybody that it had no intention of wanting to go to war, that it was happy that the Israelis were allowing people to go work in the West Bank or work in Israel and making money and all that other one. And all the time, they're just managing this huge attack. They're going to surface.
And you look at, I mean, let's talk a little bit about like the U.S. role again, you know, so part of it, their foreign policies, but we just sent what, 6 million?
Billion.
We just sent 6 billion. And somehow this idiots in the Biden administration think that we're actually going to believe it when they say, oh, well, they wouldn't use it for that.
It was
earmarked for this. It's like,
can only, you know, Do what we tell you to do, and if you spend it here, we can't spend it elsewhere. I mean, it's a joke.
They also spent money, $75 million. The House Republicans have been blocking this, and the Biden administration overruled them, and just a couple of weeks ago sent $75 million in humanitarian aid for food and stuff like that, right? And same thing. They're just pouring money there, and so, you know, they can use it to buy, oh, I don't know, rockets, weapons, things like that, right?
Our God, lessons.
Yeah, exactly. And I think what's horrifying, but also I think is sort of a game changer is the brutality, the viciousness. I mean, the killing people, chopping off the heads of Israeli soldiers, taking pictures. There was one incredible, horrible story where the Hamas terrorists kidnapped a grandmother, right, from her home, killed her, and then put all of that up on the grandmother's own Facebook page.
Well,
so that's how the family found out about it, right?
You
see the pictures of them driving through the streets with the naked, dead bodies of young women, right? And some of the people, I mean, what, 260, 250 people killed at the music festival, you know?
That would have been some music festival.
Well,
wow.
And this is from Charlene. I am so alarmed at the hearts of evangelical Christians right now as they are cheering on the murder Of the Palestinian people and consuming the images of war machines without discernment. From Jim, for the last 75 years, the majority of the Arab world have declared they want the extinction of Israel. It's hard to accept their pleas for mercy and justification. And you're seeing that, right? We saw Denver's representative, appointed after a vacancy came up, and avowed Marxist, right?
Admitted. Socialist, democratic socialist.
Right? So rallying with people supporting the Palestinians and the terrorists and saying Israel deserves all this, right? So the Colorado Democrats put out a tweet saying, we stand with Israel, blah, blah, blah. And they're getting a bash saying, well, yeah, maybe you should call your representatives there. And the squad and people like that, right? Even the State Department initially, and you know this is their real feelings, right? Puts out a tweet saying, oh, we don't want any, no retaliation, right? No. Everyone
the
must
The cycle
stand
of
now.
Violence must end.
I mean, give me cycle a break, violence. You know? And then you're the unraveling of the story of the Iranian spying in the UN, the Biden.
Well, that has really gone blown under the radar, hadn't it?
Could that play a role? But you go back to all along when the Obama administration has constantly tried to gaslight us, saying that, you know, they're the JV squad and things like this. And I mean, they accomplished.
They are. Obama, Biden is the JV squad.
Well, but not him. He was talking about Hezbollah. Was it
ISIS?
ISIS was the JV squad. And so the United States has, through its policies, given them legitimacy, I think, which emboldens them. But most importantly, it's giving them money. And so, you see all these things about what would Hamas's, you know, motive be for doing this now. And I guess it's multiple fold. But on the other hand, let's keep in mind, they're terrorists, right? Their long-term objective, and they play the long game here, is to kill everyone who doesn't convert to their belief system, right? I mean, including
That's
the United
not
States.
Not exactly what they believe, but they believe
well,
you.
Jihad.
Well, jihad. They believe in jihad, which is war until end of time. But what they believe is that everyone must convert except Christian and Jews, who are people of the book, and therefore they may live, but we'll tax them to death. That's at least the official.
And they have forever, you know, said that, I mean, they chant death to America. And I was reading one column that was saying, you know, why do we not believe them? Right. Why do we not believe them? But I think we may have to wait till later to get Robert on a different day. He's unable to reach him. As I said, I've been watching him on social media. He's all over the place. Charlene, you have your hand up. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. I don't know why I have to open my big mouth, and this is very unpopular opinion, but remember when we were really afraid of ISIS, and then we found out that ISIS were really British mercenaries?
Yeah.
And they were staging the beheading of Americans to get us, you know, more involved with Syria. And we believe so many of these images coming out of media matrix, and I call it a matrix now.
Yeah.
Because it's almost impossible to get your eyeballs through it. But remember the images of COVID coming out of China where people
right.
were passing out. And they, you know, people have their little videos from their iPhones, but there's bots on Twitter that, you know, spread that.
Right.
But what do you believe?
You never know whose propaganda to believe. You see what I'm saying? But it does seem like there's not much discernment. We're being fed a steady supply of images, and we're swallowing them, and we're not using much discernment.
As far as I know, the images are absolutely correct. We're not getting any from Ukraine, which is
insane. Yeah, we can talk about that in a second.
Well,
when
we got the images.
Slaughter 800 people, you're going to have some pretty amazing images.
Right. Well, but remember when we got the images out of Ukraine and we were all on board? Oh, we've got to save Ukraine. I mean, we're just getting so many images.
Are you pro-Hamas?
No. What? She's simply saying that you need to be careful. And I agree with you, Charlene, when you look at Twitter, because I've been going back and forth trying to figure out which accounts you can trust, right?
Exactly.
And as you said,
when those people in China were passing out and falling in front of the trains and all that, I was like, oh my God, that was the Chinese that just took that picture and sent it over to us. Thank you so much.
What's your bigger point?
I'm never going out of the house until this is all over. You see what I'm saying?
What is your bigger point?
My bigger point is let's not just reflexively consume everything that is fed to us. Let's use some discernment, because now we're finally figuring out about Ukraine. But
I think we all had Ukraine from the beginning. But you're saying we shouldn't condemn Hamas. We shouldn't condemn.
She's not saying that.
Yeah, well, I think she is.
Well, I don't think we should condemn anyone until we know what's going on and get all the facts from all the
You're not going to get much more facts. I mean, Hamas is broadcasting.
We got all the facts from Ukraine within the first 6 months, right? Until we did not get the facts from Ukraine.
Right. We never got the facts right.
Well, I think
you may have, Chuck, and I may have, but 99% of America did not, because we were force-fed images from Matrix Media. And we need to be careful what we consume and what we swallow.
Well,
and
Robert Spencer is joining us. So I'm going to
All right, thanks a lot.
Courageous view. I don't think correct, but courageous. Now we have Robert Spencer.
Well, he's joining.
He's joining.
So Robert, when you get there, if you're here, is he here yet, Thomas? Sometimes it takes a while to join, but she does have one thing that is interesting. You notice, when you look at how complicit the media is in all of this.
Your point, Julie? You think that this is really?
My point is that the Ukrainian war, which has been going on for 2 years, we've never seen anything like that coming out of Ukraine, right? And all of a sudden we've got all of these pictures up, but now we've got Robert Spencer with us.
All right, Robert, great to have you. Thanks for joining us, especially at the busy day with everything and everybody.
Yeah, they took, 4:45, 7-minute hit. I thought, oh, that'll be easy. I'll be plenty of time for Chuck and Julie. And then it was just waiting and waiting and waiting. Sorry. Anyway.
No problem.
We
obviously want to talk to you about Hamas and the strike, but I want to leave a couple minutes at the end to talk about your amazing video. And you also did a op-ed on Jihad Watch. Is it the Golzar Minute?
About Matt Gaetz. Okay.
Well, really, it was a summation of uniparty politics that I happen to agree 100% with you. And I must admit, I've never had anybody who agreed 100% with me that, Warren Harding was a good president, Coolidge was great. Quiet, Julie. But anyway, so we'll go to that, even though Julie is. Dying for war
about Israel. So let me ask you: you were tweeting not that long ago, Robert, that Hamas is saying that they're willing for truce now, right? What do you make of that?
It's very important we understand this correctly, and nobody does, Julie. Hamas is losing. That's why they ask for a truce. Look, there is not a single policy analyst in Washington or anywhere around it who knows this. And that in itself is inexcusable, but it's basic Islamic law. If you look up, I have a manual of Islamic law right behind me on a shelf. I could get it if you want and quote the exact chapter and verse, but I can tell you what it says. It says you conclude a truce with a non-Muslim entity under two circumstances. One is if you think he's going to convert to Islam. That one's not in play here. Second one is if you're losing and you need time to gather strength. And so when Hamas says, hey, we want a truce, they are saying to Israel and the world, we are losing. We need time to gather strength. And every time they do this, year after year after year, the infidels fall for it and say, oh, you want a truce? Oh, now we'll have peace. Isn't that wonderful? And they conclude a truce, and Hamas gathers its forces and fights again. And so the last thing Israel ought to do right now is say, okay, we're going to have a truce. But there's no doubt that the Biden regime and the UN and the EU and everybody else is going to be pressuring Netanyahu and saying, they want a truce. You're the warmonger now. They want peace and pressure to give them a truce.
Well, I don't think Israel, certainly not Netanyahu, is going to be falling for it. I think they pretty clearly... I've also read some of those Islamic laws and texts, and they know that they have to go and wipe out them militarily, which is not going to be easy. It's not going to be
popular,
and it's not going to be surgical because they're hiding in the tunnels and everything else. So the fighters are, the citizens are in the buildings, but it's going to be. Well, war. I mean, some people think war somehow isn't awful.
Well, in Ukraine, it's not so bad.
Yeah, in Ukraine, it's good. It's, when you have the brave Ukrainians dying, it's always nice. But
so, what is this going to?
The two schools of thought now. And Peter Boyle, who you know, and I, we talked about it a little earlier this afternoon, and he's of the image that, let's see, he's of the belief that we should, that Netanyahu shouldn't go into the Gaza Strip. And he also believes everything will be over by Friday. I think it's they should go. They have to go in the Gaza Strip. And secondly, I think this is going to escalate. I think there's going to be possible retaliatory strikes against Iran. They probably deserve, because that's the one who started it. Hezbollah feels an enormous pressure to aid their co-combatants in the south. And the Taliban want to get involved somehow. So I don't think this is going to end by Friday.
It could. There is the possibility that the Biden regime will put pressure on Israel, and Israel will feel as it's not in a position to refuse and conclude the truce. That could happen, but I agree with you. I don't think that it will in this case. This is different, or at least for so far, it looks different. There have been so many times in the past that Israel was moving against Hamas and stopped because the Washington administration told them to stop, and the problem just was kicked down the road for another day. And now they're talking about, they officially declared war. This is the first time since 1973 that Israel has been officially at war. And that, I think, is an indication that they're taking this with a different approach from how they've taken it in the past. They want to destroy Hamas completely this time, and they're going to do what it takes to do that.
How do you see this? So Hamas also today was saying, although on the one hand we want a truce, they're also saying that they're going to start executing the hostages, of which they have many, including Americans, apparently, unless Israel does what it wants. How do you see that playing out?
Well, that is based on the idea of terror. Hamas operates on the idea of terror. It's a quintessential terror group. The Quran, see, if you understand Islam, then you understand Hamas, because Hamas is an Islamic group. It tells you that in its charter, and everything it does makes sense when you look at Islam. And so in Islam, in the Quran, it tells you three times, strike terror in the enemies of Allah. Chapter 8, verse 60 says to all believers that you should make ready the steeds of war to strike terror in the enemies of Allah. So Hamas, in a modern context, says we're going to kill the hostages, because that is one of the options. Also, the Quran says when you take hostages, you can enslave them, you can kill them, you can ransom them, or you can free them, depending on what you think is best for the Islamic group. And so they're saying, we're going to kill these hostages. We're trying to terrorize, see, the Israelis into doing what they want, because right. They know the Israelis value life. They don't want to see these people put to death. And so they may be willing to make massive concessions to keep them alive. It's worked in the past.
What? Talk to us a little bit about the Biden administration and the American role in all of this.
You know something, you were talking, Chuck, about Israel may strike Iran because Iran is behind this, and Hezbollah wants to get involved. And of course, Hezbollah is a wholly owned and operated subsidiary of Iran. And so I was thinking, okay, if we got everybody who's responsible for this and Israel hit them, then Israel would be hitting Hamas, Iran, Hezbollah, and the White House.
Yeah, exactly. And explain all that, because, you know, first, I mean, the State Department, we could talk for so long. We got Iranian spy rings in the administration, apparently. But, you know, first they're like, oh, we don't want, you know, we need to de-escalate, blah, blah, blah. They deleted that. But talk about, I mean, it seems to me that, because I also want to ask you about, like, why now and why like this? But it seems to me that the American money, when they try to say, well, you know, the billions that we're giving them, we told them they could spend it only on nice things, right? I mean, how explain that?
Stupidest thing. I just cannot believe how stupid this administration thinks the American people are. And right. I think maybe this does need explaining. Too many people say money is fungible and dismiss it. And I think fungible is not a word people know what it means anymore. So let's break it down. Okay. If I have a teenager and the teenager wants to buy some weed, and I tell him, I don't like it when you buy the weed, don't buy weed, but here's $20, go buy yourself dinner. Then the teenager has $20 that he can use to go buy dinner. And he was going to eat anyway. So the money he was going to use to buy dinner, he can now use on weed. So the point is that Iran can promise us all day long that they're not going to use our $6 billion, or actually $6 billion in unfrozen funds, but $6 billion that they wouldn't have had if it weren't for old Joe Biden. They're not going to use it for Hamas or Hezbollah or any terrorist activity. They're going to use it to feed the people. That frees up the other $6 billion they were going to use to feed the people to spend on their bombs and guns. Oh,
but wait a minute, Robert. Wait a minute. The money is in Qatar. And so we can trust our Qatarian financiers of terror. They also finance Hezbollah and some of the other, but it's in Qatar. So,
which is where all the Hamas folks are too, right?
Yeah,
I mean...
Yeah, they're there praying in thanksgiving to Allah for the successful massacre of all those Israelis. Yeah. And they're in a plush office and nobody's bothering them. And anybody that tries to get in there, you can be sure that the Qatari troops would stop them. And so whose side are they on? Why are we giving aid and comfort to our enemies? That's the very definition of treason. If we had any kind of actual opposition in the United States other than Matt Gaetz and his group, then this president would not just be impeached, but he would be on trial for treason. Yeah. Because if you give $6 billion to a country that is screaming death to America, and do you know that in the mosques in Iran every Friday, they have Friday prayers? That's the big day in Islam, Friday, like Sunday for Christians. And on Friday, you go to mosque at noon and you hear the sermon, and that it is required in every mosque in Iran to chant death to America. At the Friday's big
day.
Just
kind of like, let's go Mets.
Well, it's fun. We've had him on the show many times.
People, $6 billion, that's treason.
Right. And I agree.
Well, compared to leaving the border open for 6 million people to invade.
And selling and stuff here. Well, let me ask you this, another question. So there's been a lot of talk about how did this happen? I mean, that there was the hacks on the security system was Israel. I mean, what are you hearing and seeing? Because, I mean, you see them, you know, driving a bulldozer through a fence and you're like, surely there's more security. And I gather there is.
$1 billion wall.
But something, what do we think happened?
Well, this was a carefully planned operation of deception. Muhammad, the prophet of Islam, said war is deceit. And this is another thing that Washington policymakers constantly discount. They think that if Iran tells us, oh, yes, we'll use your money for humanitarian purposes, we never consider deception in the diplomatic realm. And it's incredible. But in this case, there was a very elaborate months-long endeavor to fool the Israelis, and it worked great. The idea was that they made Hamas pose as if it were strapped for money and hurting for resources and not able to act. And meanwhile, there was trouble in the West Bank. And so the bulk of Israeli forces were concentrated in the West Bank at a time when the real trouble was in Gaza. So they were able to bulldoze the fence and nobody was around. Because they didn't think that Hamas was going to strike. Okay. They didn't think Hamas was in a position to strike. They were completely fooled. And of course, at the same time, they've been distracted by the internal divisions within Israel. And the Netanyahu government came in saying, we're going to reform the judiciary. The judiciary can annul laws willy-nilly in Israel and override the will of the people as expressed in the Knesset, the parliament. And so Netanyahu was going to do away with that. And there have been massive demonstrations from the left. And the Biden regime has funded the groups that are protesting. So they've exacerbated the divisions in Israeli society and maintained the distraction at a time when Israel should have been paying more attention to its external enemies.
What about this? And because I know we'll get to Matt Gaetz, don't worry.
I think we'll do because we got a little bit of a late start. We'd love to have you back on maybe
next week.
Next week or something else to go over your brilliant Matt Gaetz analysis of Uniparty.
There's so much here. Well, in terms of, let me ask you this. Why now and why so vicious? I mean, they have completely, I mean, even the Colorado Democrats, except for one, are condemning it, right? They have kind of made all of the Palestinian apologists and supporters. And it's kind of hard to support 250 people being slaughtered and killed.
800.
Well, no, at a music festival. Oh. even. Oh, right. I mean, and then, you know, Grant.
Well, music festival.
And driving through the streets with, you know, with naked bodies of women that are all. I mean, why did they, as to a certain extent, take the mask off? And why now?
Well, I think that they overreached, as the left so often does. The jihadis often do as well. And I think that if you look at some of the statements of Ayatollah Khamenei, the Iranian supreme leader, over the last few months, he has said Israel is on its last legs. Israel is deeply divided and it's collapsing from within. So they thought in the first place that they give it a good push and it would be destroyed. I think they already know they're wrong. They were wrong in that. Okay. But also they thought that international public opinion has been so poisoned against Israel that people would not be upset by this. And by and large, that's been correct. There have been pro-Hamas demonstrations all over the United States and all over Europe. And they don't care that all those people were massacred in cold blood and tortured and raped and everything else. They hate Israel so much that they don't care how much Israeli civilians suffer.
What about now in terms of now Israel's response? What do you think? I mean, they're saying they're cutting off food, water, electricity. And this is a two-part question. One is, how far do you think they're going to take it? I think they'll leave them with air. And secondly, how long do they have? Maybe that's be over Friday until the rest of the world, all of a sudden, you know, we start seeing the picture of what's a picture of, like, the Palestinian dad holding his baby as it took his lap. I mean, you know, before we see everybody condemning Israel now for, you know, for
that's
for,
already happening. I saw that even from people who should know better. I don't want to name names and get in wars here, but I saw people on the right on Twitter saying what Hamas did Saturday was terrible. And this was yesterday. This was Sunday or even Saturday night. And now what Israel is doing is terrible. And I thought Israel hasn't even done anything yet. So concerned about hating Israel and establishing a moral equivalence. So we're going to see much more of that. What I thought was interesting about that is I think most people don't realize that Israel gives Gaza, that is, which is run by Hamas, free electricity and all kinds of welfare benefits, you know, free food, free this, free that. And these are their mortal enemies who want to destroy them. And people don't realize that this supposedly oppressive, supposedly apartheid state is actually giving free lights and water and food to its mortal enemy. But
the Gaza Strip is not a pleasant place to live, notwithstanding all the other parts.
It could be a pleasant place to live, except it's all entirely devoted to destroying Israel. Mm-hmm. If they actually turned to trying to make a living, they could make it into a very pleasant place. It would be it could be a French Riviera in the Middle East. I kid you not, because it's got
in France. They're trying to turn the French Riviera into the Gaza Strip.
So how far is Israel going to take this? I mean, I don't know, and now I'm going to be called a warmonger, but if somebody did that to my country and the people in my country, I would be like, all bets are off now, because, you've done this once, this isn't the first time they've attacked Israel. This is just the worst that they've attacked. They clearly have the support of Iran. United States is going to keep giving Iran money. You know that, you know, the administration, for whatever fault I know, but for its reasons, wants to, you know, boost Iran. Do you think that's what they're going to do? Are they going to basically do everything they can to I don't want to say level the Gaza Strip, because you can't level. But I mean, how far are they going to, when do you think Israel be like, okay,
Israel is going to destroy Hamas or try to.
Okay.
And it's going to keep doing what it has to do in order to attain that goal. It's much more likely, though, that it will be stopped, the United States, the European Union, the United Nations will prevail upon Israel to stop before the job is completed. And the same cycle will continue yet again.
Do you think the Biden administration is going to change its policies, get rid of Iranian spy rings inside of it, the White House, things like that, or...
The Iranian spy ring story has been out there for a few weeks, and all those people are still in place except Robert Malley, the Biden administration's Iran envoy who was dealing with the spies. He's gone, but everybody else who's been identified as an Iranian spy, they're still there.
Well, you've heard, I guess, if you ask the average person on the street, you know, who Robert Mallory is, you know, Iranian inspiring. They go, no, because there's been very little publicity at all about it.
Exactly. And so the American people have no idea what's happening. Yeah. I, as a matter of fact, I'm here in my office, and I know that the guy in the office next door is a big Biden supporter, a big leftist. And, you know, we're polite when we pass each other. But I know that sometimes I'm tempted to ask him, what do you think of this or that? And in about 30 seconds, I realize he probably doesn't even know.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
CNN, MSNBC, they're not telling the New York Times. See, they're not telling the left all these things about the border being open and Iranian spies in the government and Hamas. Even probably they don't know how bloodthirsty Hamas really was on Saturday in Israel.
Right.
What? Well, before we let you go, because you've probably got 800 other interviews lined up. What is, I guess, sort of, you know, I mean, your explanation about truce? Don't buy truce. The Hamas definition of truce is not what we look at as truce. Just, I mean, just any other final things you would want to make sure people? I mean, it's so broad, I know, but
that is a broad question.
I mean, there's, like you said, there's so much people just don't know.
Here's a broad answer. It's a religious war. People don't know that. They think, oh, we'll see. The Biden regime wants Israel to stop the settlements and allow for a Palestinian state. And the Palestinians actually don't want a state. They've turned it down many times. But a Palestinian state would not solve the problem. A lot of people think, oh, they throw around this term, the two-state solution, and they think that'll fix everything. This is not about a state. This is not about land. This is about religion. Islam teaches that any land that was once ruled by Muslims belongs to Muslims forever. So they believe they have a duty before Allah, like a commandment, like thou shalt not kill, only it's the reverse in this case, a duty before Allah to destroy the state of Israel and to reclaim that land for the Muslims. And they will not stop until that's attained.
Well, I mean, they view it, and we don't, but they view it as a modern crusades, where these Europeans came in, conquered Jerusalem, conquered surrounding lands. It took Islam 200 years, 150 years to kick them out, but they kicked them out.
And that's what they're endeavoring to do now. There is no possibility of their accepting a Jewish state in Israel or anywhere else for that matter, in any form of any size.
Robert, hey, thank you. Thanks for your so time. Much. Yes, but we're going to have to just book you for, for the next couple of whatever.
But I really do want to have you back on to talk about your brilliant analysis.
Tom Tancredo coming on next, and he says to say hi to you. Tom Tancredo does.
Oh, hey, say yeah, tell him I said hello. I haven't heard from him.
Okay. Robert, thank you so much. Appreciate your time. and we do have now, speaking of that, Tom Tancredo, former Congressman Tom Tancredo. I guess let's just kind of continue, Tom, before we get into the speaker. You have some great stories on that, but your thoughts on, you know, the Biden administration, like Robert Spencer was saying at the beginning of his interview, that, you know, if we're going to go after, if Israel wants to go after all the people who contributed to this, they should go after the White House as well. I mean, what do you think of American policy regarding all of this?
Well, let's see. Well, how do I start? And I certainly can't do anything better than what Robert has already done. I love the guy, and he edited my last book, and he's just been wonderful, a good friend all the time. In fact, he was the only one that eventually stuck up for me at the infamous, if they do a nuclear device in the United States, right, then right. We should do what, right? And everybody went nuts. And,
yep.
But he said, you know, he said, I at first I thought, geez, I don't know if he should have said that. He said, but then after I saw the reaction around the world, I thought, damn, he's right. and I think we should probably say it again, because right now we are in the most, I think, dangerous time when you recognize what is happening. You know, there's that old phrase about the barbarians at the gate. Well, the barbarians are past the gate. They're past the gate in Israel. They are, and many have come through our gate, which was never even closed to them on that, on the border. They're here. They're here. The chances are that there will be some terrorist activity in the United States, to coincide with all this that's going, especially if we do take more dramatic steps in supporting Israel in this, then I think it's almost true that there will be another horrendous attack here. And so you better get ready for it. You know, I think I had a couple of commercials when I ran for president that also started quite a... One of them was a guy who was putting a bomb underneath a bench or something in a mall, in some big mall, people all over, and he has his hoodie, he was a terrorist, and in the next thing is kaboom. And I say, you know, I support the, I know, I approve this message because somebody's got to say it. And God.
It is on that. You got to worry because I know... You know, when you look at the Islamic and the basically the terrorist social media feeds, I mean, this is like, you know, a recruiting bonanza for them, right? And they encourage us.
Well, that's right. But what percent of the 7 million people who've come in under
last week?
How many of them are potential recruits?
Well, exactly. And you know, it was another thing, remember, that I also got in a lot of trouble for and got told they could never darken the doorstep of the White House. By Karl Rove, was when I said that if we had another event like 9/11 and if we had done no more to secure our borders than we had up to that point in time, and we have not done anymore, then the blood of the people killed would be on the president's. In that time, it was, by the way, Bush, but I said it would be on the president's head and the members of Congress who have done nothing. Well, it's the same thing here. If we don't do something about that, then what happens next will be on this president and this Congress's head.
He wouldn't know it because they had a barbecue and then he
had to put a lid on it.
He had to put a lid on it today. Well, let me go back to that. We were talking about, and you and I were talking Friday about, you know, the battle over the speaker, the new House speaker. And you were explaining to me how you sunk Newt Gingrich's quest.
Oh, no, I was just one little tiny part of that. I can't take all the credit for that at all. But what happened I just meant to say that it was this situation and this action that has been taken, not all that unique. It's happened before, and it happened when I had just gotten elected. And the speaker called me that night. The speaker, and he is, you know, you're still the speaker. Once you're the elected speaker, you're still the speaker until you're not, until you either quit or you're thrown out. But he was the speaker, even though we were not in session. And so he called and he said, you know, he wanted to congratulate me on the race and all this time. I mean, when I first got this call, I thought, oh my God, it's the Speaker of the House calling me home first. How exciting is that? And because, of course, this is like my first night, you know, I mean, the election had just taken place. And I said, oh, well, thank you. And I was laudatory on what he had done in the past to help bring about a Republican resurgence and taking over Congress for the first time in 40 years, the House. And so I was nice to him and everything. And then he said, I assume I can count on your vote, you know, for Speaker again. And so I was silent for a minute or so, seemed like an hour, but I said, well, no, sir, you can't. And he goes, what? What? But it just is, I said, no, you can't. And he said, why not? Said, well, let's see, for starters, we've lost seats ever since you've been speaker. Secondly, and I went through this, what I consider to be a litany of mistakes he made.
What were they? What were the litany of some of them?
Well, the one that sticks in my mind that we talked about that he got most upset about was one that said, and by the way, you blinked when you were facing Clinton over the issue of a shutdown. And he did. We lost. And we should have, of course, shut the government down. And as I kept saying, every time I got the chance, by the way, while I was in the Department of Education and would have been affected personally by that, I would send a fax to the White House, to Reagan, and because there was no such thing as an email and all that. And I'd say, Mr. President, I am this lowly Nuckenberger, you know, appointee of yours here in Denver, Colorado. I'm part of the administration. And I'm begging you, do not open up the government. After it closed, it got closed a couple of times for maybe 2 or 3 days. It wasn't much ever. And everybody got just a little bit of a, a paid vacation because everybody came back, got money for what, nobody lost any money. And no. I said, please don't open the government again. it'll take forever before people really recognize that it has happened.
It hasn't.
Nobody'll know. Nobody will know. And no. So, but going back to Newt. So anyway, that was that. And he was unhappy. But what must have happened, and I can only surmise this, is that there were a lot of other people who told him something similar because he quit. He quit. Quit Congress. Quit the speaker.
No, maybe he just said, man, if Tom Tancredo is against me, I don't have a chance. Well, what's your analysis?
Let me ask this, Tom. Now, Tom, you disagreed, I understand, with the ousting of McCarthy.
Well, kind of. I have mixed feelings about it, that's for sure. But I keep wondering what I would have done, had I been there and to vote on whether or not. And I don't know that I would have done it at that point because the one thing is when I was talking to Gingrich, I really wasn't concerned that we would lose control of the Congress because or the House because of his departure. Where I must admit, I don't know how this will affect the ability to have a successful elected in 2024 when you could then easily, let's say we have maybe a 20-person majority. It's a lot easier then to get things done before you even start the Congress. You have an elected speaker. And even if we don't, even if we have a very short majority and we do it then before the Congress, it's just a lot better, it seems to me, than doing it in the middle of a session. And I would never, believe me, if somebody would have said to me, do you want to be speaker now? I'd say, you're crazy. I don't know who would want to be speaker with when one person can bring about a vote to House.
Well, that's been true for
chaotic.
For the entire time of a republic, except under Nancy Pelosi's speakership. Every other speaker could be the motion to vacate, and it was done in 1910, I think, Joe Cannon. So that one
really,
vote won.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
Chuck and I were talking, and it's like, should you be encouraged about Jim Jordan? But it seems to me, and this want to get your thoughts on this, that the problem is the system itself is essentially corrupt, right? I mean, your main job as speaker is to kind of dole out money.
From the big donors.
From the big donors. I mean, that's essentially your main purpose. And so how do you stay pure in that process? I mean, or are we going to be doomed, whoever it becomes? Are they going to turn into
a uniparty?
Yeah, they're going to turn into, to McCarthy or Newt Gingrich, or what do you, how do you read that?
How do you say? Well, it's the reason why, of course, that usually the speaker and the leadership stays put time after time as long as their party holds the majority, because that's exactly what happens, is that, as we've said 100 times on these little podcasts, follow the money when you wonder why things are happening in a way that you don't think they should. So, I saw that there was one person, a young lady who I think had just gotten elected. She took over a seat from a Democrat somewhere, maybe it was South Carolina. And she supported his ouster. She voted with the aide, and she had gotten, I don't know, lots of money from him. But it didn't matter to her, evidently. And by the way, I think Gingrich sent money to me and my campaign when I was running, and it didn't matter to me either. I mean, you just have to have.
I think you're talking about Nancy Mace from South Carolina.
Oh, that could be it. Yeah. Isn't she a first term? Didn't she just get elected?
Yeah, she got one.
She
had a tough campaign. Trump didn't like her and stuff.
So do you think?
Well, anyway, there are people, there are ways to deal with it. And again, it's, you have to assume, you have to, it makes sure that somebody is, every time you hear somebody's running for, especially Congress, you have to really beat them over the head over and over again and make them swear to God up and down. Not that that will ever solve any, I mean, ever hear anything that they would keep their word, but try your best and keep saying to them, you know, the corrupting element in this, in our Congress, in our nation really is money. And you have to understand that they will use that. They will beat you over the head with that. They will tell you it, when it comes time, and you have to take a vote, not just on the speaker, of course, but on a bunch of other things that you hate, you never would do, and but you do it because they threaten you with no more funding. Nobody's coming out to your district to raise money, have big dinners, and all that sort of thing. And so, are you willing to accept that? Are you willing to be to have principle matter? And even if it costs you a lot of money and a lot of support from the top, I mean, they look for primary opponents.
Right. I was going to say, I would imagine they would primary you.
Money coming from the speakers did seem to matter to Lauren Boebert, who has acted like she voted for the ouster when she didn't, and she'd gotten quite a lot of funds very recently.
You're right.
Yeah.
One wonders there, you know, if it's combined with the money that she got, along with the shell shock he has been subject to from her last, the last little go round with
the theater stuff. Yeah.
So maybe she's just looking to, she's thinking, I can't, you know, I better keep my head down here.
Yeah.
And
what about Ken Buck?
I don't know. Oh, what about Ken Buck?
Ken Buck? Explain Ken.
What about Ken Buck? But it just fits exactly what we were talking about the last time, and that is he wants to be the curmudgeon, right?
Yeah.
He thinks that will set him aside to the extent that he'll be able to do something after this that he's looking forward to. And whether
like a CNN,
CNN or whatever, that's the word that's out there. And I do not know if it's true or not, but it certainly seemed, his acting seemed to me to say, yes, that's exactly what I'm doing. Because he also has to recognize it isn't hard for him to do this. He isn't a person that is constrained by philosophical and
principles, mind things like that.
Principle. That's right. That's the word I was looking. He's not constrained by that. it's easy. You got to say, well, what do I do in this situation? I know. I'll vote. You know, throw his ass out, even though I wouldn't.
You're right. It just becomes kind of easy to make the decisions. Oh, well, hey, listen, Tom, we've got to let you go. But thank you so much.
You're sounding great. Everybody loves you.
Everybody on this, all of our listeners say you sound great.
Not everybody. Not everybody. I can assure you of that. Not everybody.
Maybe not Ken Buck.
Not Ken Buck. That is absolutely true. And there's probably a couple of others.
All right.
Thanks so much.
Talk to you soon. Thank you, Tom.
So long, guys. Bye-bye.
All right. Talk to you, Kratom. Well, and it kind of goes back. So we'll have to get Robert Spencer on because we ran out of time where he talks about.
I want a whole show on that one.
Well, and so we'll see. Obviously, guys, we'll be following and, you know, have more on what's going on, whatever it happens to be in Israel. It's going to be, I mean, it is. It was astonishing to hear. If you just kind of joined the show, one of the things Robert Spencer was saying is don't be fooled when Hamas says we're ready for truce. He was saying in the Quran that you only have a truce for one if Israel is going to convert to Islam, which they're not going to do, or you think you're losing, so you need to have like a fake truce so you can regroup, right? Their idea of truce is not our idea of truce. And so, you know, everyone's going to say the White House is going to be like, well, they want a truce.
They want a truce.
Just forgive and forget. Forget all those dead
you
people.
war, Palestinians, they killed Israelis. I mean, who cares?
Now let's have a truce. And by the way, we're going to give more Well, the Clinton Foundation will probably jump in on this. Now they're going
to
go.
I hope so. They're going to go to the Gaza Strip. Like
build the Gaza Strip.
It'll be great. It'll be just great.
Thought on is kind of one of Charlene's original point, in that you kind of wonder sometimes what you're seeing is why you see. I was talking about this just the other day, the bazillions of war correspondents that you're seeing in battle, jumping in ditches with their helmets on in the Gaza Strip, right? All over the place. You haven't seen a single thing of that out of Ukraine. Look at all of the people with their cell phones. I guess the cell phones don't work in Ukraine, right? All of these horrible
attacks. And the estimates are about, 500,000 people have died. No problem. You don't want to cover that too much.
Obituaries, you don't see funerals, anything like that.
They're very happy over there.
So that just still, I get to say one more time, wag the dog. It is, I think, as the conservative Trips was pointing out, the war in Ukraine, the war in Israel right now is a real war. The war in Ukraine is an intelligence operation.
Well, I want to thank everybody. I want to thank Tom and Robert Spencer, and we didn't get to talk to you all, but we got a lot of your great comments, We'll be ready for them on Wednesday.
That's right. See everybody. And thank you to PBS as always. See you guys on Wednesday.
Bye-bye.